All right, this podcast goes in conjunction with my latest newspaper column, and with me today are guys, a couple of whom I haven't seen in 40 years. So I guess it was 1979.
Right.
Was the last time I saw you guys. Yeah. The band was called Trax, T-R-A-X. With me are Alan Funderburk, the drummer, Darren Cupp, the bass player, Steve Scarborough, the guitar player, and I also played guitar in the band. Not with us today is Philip Johnson, who just couldn't make the trip back. But I'm going to start with Darren and ask you to kind of lean into the microphone here and explain to us how the band Trax was formed, because Steve and I were not original members of the group. How did Trax come together, and who all was in it?
Well, it started out with me, Alan, Philip, Melanie West played guitar for us. And we were doing a talent contest in Foreman, Arkansas, I believe it was. Of course, we won the contest, and I believe y'all were in there playing in another band that came in second place. And we talked to Steve after the deal because we wanted, this guy burnt the guitar up that night. And I told the other guy, I said, man, we got to see if he will, you know, we can steal him. So we talked with him, and he said, sure, he'd come sit in with us. And he made a trip to Texarkana, and we had a practice or two, and Melanie got a little jealous because we were giving all the leads to him. So she throwed a big fit, and we finally just told her, well, we don't need you because we got him now, you know. And so anyway, Steve called John, and you came in and helped us out with that, you know, playing rhythm and everything. And
singing,
yeah. And that's more or less how it started.
So, Alan, how did you guys wind up forming a band in the first place? You know, the 1970s garage bands were very, very common. How did yours form?
We were all in high school band together, stage band, marching band, concert band. Melanie, I think she played percussion, I think.
Yeah.
And I played drums, snare drum, and drum set. And Darren played trumpet and bass guitar in the stage band. And we just thought, everybody's doing this garage band thing. Let's try to give a whirl at this. And we got to rehearse at the stage band hall at the high school.
And use their equipment.
Use their PA and their everything, mics and everything, yeah. And it branched off. Our band director was very supportive of us, George Gamble. And he promoted it.
So what year was that?
That was 78, wasn't it?
78,
yeah. Junior in high school. We were, all of us, like I said, in stage band, concert band, and marching band. It's what season of the year it was. We were in a band no matter what it was. And our band director let us play drum sets. Even in junior high school, at College Hill Junior High, he promoted playing drum sets in the marching band and the concert band, which is a big plus for a little scrawny little kid, you know, long-haired little kid with all the big boys around there.
What was your first paid gig, do you remember?
At the New Boston VFW, I think is what it was. I think junior high school, eighth grade. I remember getting a gig through my drum teacher, Dave Daly, where George Davis was a band director at College Hill. He seen something in me, I think, and he suggested me take a drum lessons. So I took lessons at Love All Music from Dave Daly, and then he promoted kids to learn as fast as they could and push themselves. So I remember he said he had a gig at the American Legion, New Boston. I remember getting the gig excited, and I fell asleep probably 20 times that night and woke back up at the end of the song, or maybe four songs later, I don't know. But it was an experience I started to love and pushed myself to do more with as time went on.
What do you remember about Steve coming on board? Because I have to tell you guys, this is the first time I'm learning that Steve actually played with you guys before the night that Steve asked me to come with him.
I don't have as much memory as Darren does about it for some reason. But I just know we had that contest we played up there, and we had lights and a big drum set and more showboat and homemade marketing and promotion. I think that's what won us over. You guys are good.
We had those tall column speakers on each side, and on top of each one of them we had a light that looks like a train crossing light. And we had a flasher unit on it, and they were flash back and forth, you know. And I remember Philip and I built those out of coffee cans and plexiglass.
And that was stripped on the front with the colored plexiglass. You stomp on the button and change color lights, light bulbs.
Yeah, it was kind of fun doing that.
Southern engineered. It's all good.
Steve and I don't know, how old were we when we first started hanging out together? 12, maybe?
Well, when I first moved to Arkansas from California, I started second grade, and the first person that I met and became friends with was Scotty Davis. And Scotty went to church with you and knew you.
Yeah.
So I think I probably was introduced to you through him.
So it was probably before 12. Yeah, we were young. I remember we both got into playing guitars about the same time. And my first guitar teacher was a guy named Mike Huberl. I was 8 years old. Why anybody would take an eight-year-old for guitar lessons, but he must have needed the money, yeah. Then I took guitar lessons from a man named Nelson Carson. I actually wrote a column about him later in life. He was a very influential guy. You were in a band. I was in a different band. How did you wind up connecting with these guys and then dragging me into it? Because I honestly did not know that until now.
Benita Lovall, the co-owner of Lovall Music Company, she asked me if I wanted a job working Saturdays, pay me a dollar an hour, I'd go down there and empty the trash and sweep the floors. So I said, sure. So that's what I did. I was at Lovall's. And that's how I met these guys. I worked with Darren's dad, Pat Cup, and met all the local musicians there. And of course, I could barely play, you know, but I'd see some old cheap Japanese guitar before Japanese guitars were any good, and maybe for $60, you know, I could put it on layaway, get a guitar and an amp, and try to learn, you know. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into music, and how I ended up meeting these guys was through the music store. And
music store used to be something really to hang out with on the weekends. Everybody come from all the musicians come and hung out in music stores.
Oh, I can remember that happening during the week, even and during the summertime.
Such a fun thing back then.
Yeah. Yeah, the world has gotten really different. Yeah. I'll tell you what I remember. We wound up driving my mother's Deuce and a Quarter, which is a 71 Buick. I remember hauling the gear in my mom's car.
Yeah.
And so she actually allowed us, because I wasn't even old
you
enough.
Wasn't,
to,
yeah.
I was not even old enough to drive legally by myself. And we drove my mom. My mother let me drive her Buick over there, and we threw all the gear in the back. And
it was a big one, too.
It was a big car. But I remember getting over there, and we were at the band hall, and you were playing with them. And the next thing I knew, you guys were offering me a guitar to strap on, and then you guys left for a huddle. And then do you guys remember this? You guys left for a huddle. It's like, we'll be right back. And so you leave for a huddle. And you come back and you asked us both to join the band. That's what I remember about it.
It took off, yeah.
So, 78, 79, then you guys graduated. Steve, you went in the printing business?
Graphic design, basically.
Graphic design.
For newspapers and printing.
Darren, what'd you wind up doing?
I've been at Cooper Tire for 38 years now.
Is that enough?
Just almost. I'm just about at it.
Yeah. So, Alan, you've out of all of us, you've probably had, I would say, the most interesting life. I mean, you've played with famous musicians. You're still driving tour buses. Talk about your career and what you've done.
Well, after high school, I still worked at Lovall Music for about. I got pregnant really early.
Yeah.
I guess 1980. I had a baby, and until 1986, lived in Texarkana. Then got the bug with all my friends. I played weekends with Brian and everybody around. There were clubs all over the area. I mean, back then, there were 30, 40 clubs we could play at any given time and make money. And it's just a thing of the past now, but I did that, did the rock and roll thing, did the country thing, and then a friend started moving to Nashville. And I thought, I got a bug, everybody's going. And I went up there, fell in love with it, and I've been up there 34 years now, I guess. A lot of friends did well up there. Yeah, everybody that goes, if you apply yourself, you can do well and have a good, straight life, I guess.
Do you think it's different now than it was when you guys first went to Nashville? Because I can remember you and, I mean, some other people that we knew that went and just got jobs. Is it that easy now, or is it not that easy anymore?
Well, I got a job. Most everybody has a job or a rich girlfriend. And you can play on the weekends. Yeah. Well, a successful musician definition in Nashville is a girlfriend with two jobs. So that's the ideal situation. I never did that. I got into music from, I guess, 86 till about 96. But I also started a rental business, video camera rentals, when they were really hot. And that turned into AV rentals. Then I started into jet ski rentals and pontoon boat rentals. And I did that for 10 years. I had a monopoly in all of Nashville on that for 10 solid years. And it was just 18 hours a day nonstop. I had to give up music and everything. And I sold out prime time, built me a cabin, traveled the world for a few years, did a lot of base jumping and skydiving like I always did, and seen the world. Come back home, built me a cabin, and got back into music for a few years. I got pregnant again. And I have a 20-year-old, almost 21-year-old daughter now from a second marriage. And she's going to college at UT in Knoxville, studying forestry, doing really well. And I'm in Nashville driving tour buses. I'm going on 20 years now. I drive for all from movie stars to singers to celebrities to anything.
One of the things that you shared with me about some of the movie stars is how many of them that don't fly And so they have these nice buses. You always think of people traveling on buses being musical acts. Not so.
No, it's a lot of celebrities. I mean, I drive for Sandra Bullock quite a bit, Lenny Kravitz, and even Dolly Parton doesn't fly. Aretha Franklin wouldn't fly at all either. And you could only drive during the day, not over a bridge, not over a mountain. What else was it? This is crazy, but if she fell asleep, you could get away with it. She's the backseat driver. And she'd holler, Alan, where you at? So I'm gonna pick you back on the interstate, Aretha. But yeah, I've been driving country stars, rock stars, from Kiss to Styx to Rush, all of our heroes back in the day in their later years, you know. Got to see meet all of them, see what they're really like. Some you really like, some you wish you never met before. Most all the country stars, from Tim McGraw to Kenny Chesney to Gary Allen, and it just goes on and on. There's so many people I've driven for. We travel all over the country, get to see all the country for free, and most of the time on an empty bus between Nashville and the West Coast, you get to drive empty and stop at all national parks, see things, do things. You have 5 days to get to L.A. You can do it in two if you try. You have 5 days to do it, so I find a lot of time to see the country and learn things.
I'm going to ask Steve this question, because, Steve, you actually still play. Out of the four of us, I mean, I don't play professionally. I mean, I obviously never played professionally, but I don't play for money anymore and haven't since 40 years ago. But you still play, so what's changed being out on the road?
Well, I never was really out on the road. When I play, it would be, you know, with a local group. There'd been a couple periods in my life where I stopped playing, just lost interest for periods of 10 years, a couple of different times. But one of my buddies at work in Dallas was a guitar player and singer, and he was pretty good, and he was interested in putting together a band. He knew that I'd played before and asked me if I'd help him, and I said, yeah, I'll help you. And he had some buddies that played. You know, we went and practiced with them one night, and I pulled him to the side and I said, okay, now you've got to make a decision. Do you want to just show up and have fun every weekend, practice with your buddies, or do you want to try to actually make a good band and go out and play for the public? He goes, no, I want a good band. I said, okay. I said, then your buddies can't be a part of it. So he goes to his buddies and he says, y'all, I'm sorry, Steve says y'all can't be in the band.
Sold you out.
But his name's Rick Cosman. We had a band called Rick Cosman and the Carburetors. We played around Dallas for a good 10 years or so. And then most of mine, my wife's family, got up to the age where they were passing away or needed help. So we moved back to Arkansas, and Rick has just recently reformed the band. So now I'm driving up there once or twice a month, you know, for different things. That's about the extent of what I'm doing right now, other than every now and then, you know, like Alan called, you called, and, hey, you want to get together and do this thing? Yeah, great. You know, like our buddy Kent called, hey, we're bringing Dolly to town. Do you want to do this thing? Yeah. I'll do anything as long as it's, you know, I'm capable of it. I just do little stuff here and there and play with Rick Cosman and the Carburetors.
Darren, let me ask you this question. Do you think that the era that we all enjoyed in the late 1970s, the garage band, I'll call it the garage band era, every high school had at least two, maybe more. You just don't see that anymore. Do you think they're missing out? Or do we live in the world of auto-tune and Taylor Swift and all that? Are the days of people playing their own instruments and forming their own bands, is that pretty much gone?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's gone. It's just, it's different now. I've got a niece that's 13. And she told me what she wanted for her birthday was a Lynyrd Skynyrd CD. And I said, oh, really? And she says, yeah. She said, I said, well, when did you start listening to this kind of music? She says, well, the music they put out today is a bunch of junk. I'd rather listen to the you know, 80s, 70s, 80s rock and roll than I had that. And so I went, took her to town, and we got her some CDs, you know. And I think that's what it is mostly. The music they make today is so much different.
Guitar Center, their guitar sales have dropped, I think, it's 60 to 70% what it used to be.
But a lot of online sales now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it stands to reason.
But also, in my opinion, the garage band days, I think they are gone. You don't see that many of them.
I think they're still there. If you go to YouTube and you see a band play, that band got together somewhere and worked up that material.
You don't hear them in the yard neighborhoods anymore, though.
No, you don't. They're inside. They've Googled enough to where they know how to soundproof now. They know how to do things we didn't know how to do and didn't have anybody to ask.
I think the irony for me, to Steve's point about people on YouTube, when we learned songs, we had to actually get the vinyl out, We had to put the needle on it. We had to listen to the same part of the song over and over and over till we figured out what chord they were playing, what the drum lick was, and then we had to sit down and practice that as a band. Whereas now you can go on YouTube and you can just do a search for Rocky Mountain Way, and they may not all be right, but there's a number of different people who are on there that are going to show you how to play Rocky Mountain Way or any particular part of Rocky Mountain Way, the bass line or the drums for it. Or you can find isolated tracks from the original cuts of bands. Like if you want to hear Under Pressure by Queen, but you only want to hear the drums and the bass, you can look that up and you can do it. And that's, I think the irony is that it's a whole lot easier now to learn songs. I tend to agree with Alan. I'm just not sure that, you know, I can remember going, we would practice out in my driveway in Ashdown, Arkansas. And I can remember going to school the next day and the football coach would say, "We enjoyed your practice yesterday." And they're like four blocks from my house, right? So we were like loud, and you just don't hear that anymore.
I was in another band. It's been about 20 years ago. I guess we broke up, but we practiced in my garage at my house. We had Miller County show up on several occasions.
My house too, yeah.
But we had there was one deputy, though, that he could shred a guitar, boy. He come in, sat down with us, and then when we got through, he said, "All right, boys," he said, "we all going to have to turn it down." He said, "Don't make me come back.
Play another song with you."
But, yeah, he sat in with us for a little while, but it was...
Oh, the learning thing, I don't mean to interrupt you, but my daughter, I got her piano lessons to learn how to read and everything. She played drums really well, and did guitar well on her own. Gave her great piano lessons, older lady out of college. And it wasn't until, and she did really well, but until she got on YouTube and learned Tchaikovsky and Bach and all this stuff on her own, I could not believe the difference in learning ability of her own, just sitting and learning. A piano teacher could never teach her that.
It's not any easier to be a musician. You still have to put the work in, but it's easier to find the instruction that you need.
True.
You no longer come to a dead end like we did. You know, there was no book or maybe nobody in your town that was good enough. So now not only is there a huge number of great musicians all over the place, but whereas we might be able to sell some records and make money, they can't. They're going to be downloaded and stolen from them. And so I'm not exactly sure what their motivation is.
Alan may know this better than me, but I would imagine that the majority of the money that musicians make anymore is from touring.
It's all touring now and merchandise sales, because it's not any more record sales anymore. It's all pirated and free now. You have to make your money on merchandising, t-shirts. A $50 t-shirt costs $3 to make, and they sell them right and left. And hats cost $2 to make. They sell them for $35.
My wife and I went to see Paul McCartney recently, and at the time we bought the tickets, which was the fall of 2018, we weren't sure how many U.S. dates he was going to do. And the guy's pushing 80, so, you know, you're not real sure if he's ever going to tour again. So I'd seen Ringo, wanted to make sure I saw Paul. The point of the story is, spend almost $1,000 on tickets, and then when we get there, you've got to pay to park. T-shirts are $50 a piece. Bottle of water is $7.50 or whatever. And so I think you're exactly right. That is where all the money's being made. Yeah. Because,
but thank God they are able to make it somewhere, because we still do want the artists out there.
Yeah, yeah, and I was obviously willing to pay the money. I mean, they're not very... He's the only person that I would ever pay that kind of money to go see.
The big acts like that, it's hard ticket sales compared to soft ticket sales. They get their money before they ever leave the house. They're $2 million or whatever it is. They don't have to sell tickets to get that money, where the promoters give it up front, and you're already paid before you ever go there. And it's a soft, if you're promoting your own tour, you have to sell your own tickets at promoters, and it's just it's a nightmare that way. So you look for the hard ticket sales, and it's guaranteed money in their pocket before they ever leave the house.
Any advice for young people who want to pick up a guitar or a bass guitar or a set of drumsticks or a keyboard? Any advice on what to do?
Just practice, and reach out to friends that you may think maybe play, and try to do another garage band of all things. Try to interact with other musicians and learn together, mess up together, struggle together.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun. That's the main thing.
Yeah,
it's just like getting together and working on cars or bicycles. You know, get together and, you know, you work on your music. And if it's not fun to you, you'll pretty soon decide not to do it anymore.
Right. sure somebody will with Toria. But on our learning curve, you talk about getting the needle and putting on the records, how we learned back then. You couldn't wait for that new album to come out and put it on the record player. Well, how phenomenal was it when you had cassette decks you could record off the speaker? And how fast did that increase our learning abilities? Rewind cassette, play. Now the technology is so much better, but that was a huge step, sticking a cassette deck up to a speaker and recording the album.
But I'll tell you this, there's a whole bunch of songs I learned wrong. Yeah. Doing that.
What we all did.
Yeah. And then words I couldn't quite understand and that I was singing wrong, and somebody in the audience would tell me, that's not the lyric. They'd tell me the right one. I'd be like, oh, okay, thank you.
That makes sense. That makes sense, yeah.
It's not, there's a bathroom on the right, there's a bad moon on the rise.
Yeah.
Didn't kiss this guy, he kissed the sky.
Paul McCartney made a comment from the stage that is to your point, Steve. He said, I wrote the song Blackbird, and all of you who think you know how to play it, you're playing it wrong. I can remember growing up, one of us would learn a lick, whether it was Stairway to Heaven or whatever the lick was, and we would teach it wrong to the next person who would then screw it up even more, teaching it to the next person. It's how you learn.
Let me tell you something that was kind of a big part of my career and one of my buddies, Kent Wells, and one of your buddies, and all of these guys know him. There was a great guitar player in town named Leland Green, and he would come by the music store and he would play, and we would all peek around the corner at him, or if we were brave, you know, we'd just walk up to him and watch him, you know. And I hadn't been playing very long, but when I watched him play, all I saw was his hand was floating over the fretboard. It wasn't actually touching any notes or moving. It was like hovering is what it looked like. There is a song he was playing by Jerry Reed called Jerry's Breakdown that I recorded him playing it. And I took it home, and me and Kent worked it up. And we went and auditioned for the Amusement Park Dog Patch with that tune. Later we played at Magic Springs. We always auditioned with that tune because it was a very difficult tune and had open strings and stuff. Well, now that I'm older and I see people on YouTube playing it, not only did we play it wrong, they're playing it with flat picks and finger picks. We learned it with one pick. So we're having to sit there and do string skipping and all this extra labor that we wouldn't have had to do if we'd have learned it right or had somebody show it to us right. But because that put that challenge on us, we were able to get jobs.
Well, guys, it's been fun seeing you again. It's hard to believe it's been 40 years. By the way, Jimmy Carter was the president the last time we saw each other.
And how'd we come up with the name?
Oh yeah, that is a great question. I know the story of how that happened, but so the name of the band is Trax, T-R-A-X. So tell us the story of how the band got, because it had the name before Steve and I got there.
Well, it was just like we couldn't think of a name. I looked down at my cheap Kmart shoe, all I could afford, my mom could afford. It said Trax on it. I said, hey, about Trax, right? And it stuck, and this is Trax.
Well, it's actually the perfect name for a band playing Trax, right? It is. Yeah. Guys, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.